Good evening. I'd like to call, well, not the meeting yet. I'm going to call to open the public hearing on the 2013 New York State Housing Trust Fund Office of Community Renewal Community Development Block Grant Program application. Would anyone want to speak on as part of that hearing? Carol?
Can I just ask, we have an unusual situation this year with the timing of the application. The hearing is now, and the application is because of the state parameters, is going to have to come to us at our next meeting. So would it make sense, since I do see there's some staff here, for them to explain that and a little bit about the program so people...
Sure, that'd be fine. Hi, Megan.
Good evening.
Thank you. Yeah. There you go. Thank you. Good evening. As Carol mentioned, the state has accelerated the deadline this year. They've also just changed it again on us yesterday. Unfortunately, it gives us a little bit more time to put things together, but not in terms of the public meeting. So we are here tonight. I'm available if there are any questions or if the public has any questions as well. So this hearing is because we're hoping to put in an application for the 2013 Community Development Block Grant Program. And the New York State anticipates about $12 million being available for housing activities. And counties are able to apply for grants of up to $750,000. With me tonight also is Paula Poti from Better Housing for Tompkins County, and she can provide a little bit of background and statistics and things as well if you've got any questions there.
Oh, that's good. And this is Megan McDonald from the Planning Department.
Thank you.
All right.
I forgot our height difference.
Yeah, a little bit. Thank you, Megan. Hi, good evening. Thank you for welcoming me here tonight. I am the program manager for the Tompkins County Homeownership Program that has been successfully administered from Tompkins County CDBG grants and Better Housing. In the 12-plus year history of the program, we've assisted nearly 350 low to moderate income individuals become homeowners in Tompkins County. It has been consistently successful. It is a program that prepares our residents to become first-time home buyers, gives them an education on all aspects of home ownership, and follows them not only before the process but afterwards to give support. As I stated, we've had nearly 350 applicants become successful. The numbers that are served each time we get a CDBG grant have been consistent, and the numbers have been pretty much right on to the dime. For every $1 million that was generated in this program, $5 million would have been generated through bank leveraging and real estate, and, of course, keeping the homes full for the tax basis. So it's a program I'm very proud to be part of. And, you know, we'll invite you to ask questions.
All right. Well, I think it's a hearing. It's not a discussion. But, Mike, you had a question?
No, just a comment. It's a comment I've made at these hearings before, and I continue to feel is important. And that is, I really think some attention ought to be paid to our manufactured homes, our mobile homes in Tompkins County. There's a lot of need out there to improve the mobile home stock. We work a lot with the older houses, but we really don't have or haven't set up a program, to my knowledge, to work on these. There are many dilapidated mobile homes and trailer parks all over the county. And I would hope that we could devise a program that would be of assistance to the owners of those homes.
Would you like to comment on that?
Better Housing for Tompkins County has multiple programs related to housing that they administer. and rehab and reconstruction are a big part of that. The mobile home issue is a pressing issue across many rural New York State counties, and we have very strict rules about what we can do to bring a mobile home up to grade or possibly replace them. And there are grants that are available. We do continually look for those grants. But like everything, they're highly competitive. As far as mobile homes in relationship to the Tompkins County Home Ownership Program, we will allow the purchase of a mobile home as long as it is on a permanent foundation, passes all requirements set down by HUD for mobile home financing. So we do keep a very attentive eye to the mobile home issue.
Thank you, Paula. Is there any other comments? All right, I'll close the public hearing. And I'd like to open the legislature meeting for December 3rd, 2013. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Roll call of members.
Mr. Burbank will be arriving later this evening. Ms. Chalk?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAsee?
Present.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robison?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
14 members present.
Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
I have a proclamation first, and then I'm going to reorder the agenda a little bit and ask for Pat Pryor to take a part of the GO report for us. So the proclamation, and if Karen Baer would like to join us up here. Whereas Human Rights Day is observed by the international community every year on December 10th, commemorating the day in 1948, the United Nations General Assembly adopted the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And whereas the purpose of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights is the full promotion and protection of human rights and to establish that we all enjoy fundamental freedoms, namely civil, political, economic, social, and cultural rights. And whereas the purpose of Human Rights Day is to increase awareness about human rights everywhere, including Tompkins County, and whereas in December 1963, the Tompkins County Legislature created the Tompkins County Human Rights Commission and Office of Human Rights in order to promote mutual respect and understanding among all racial, religious, and ethnic groups in the community. And since that time, the Human Rights Commission and Office have played vital roles in protecting and promoting human rights throughout the county. Now, therefore, I, Martha Robertson, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, to hereby proclaim Tuesday, December 10th, 2013, as Human Rights Day in Tompkins County and urge all of our citizens to be appreciative of the work the Tompkins County Human Rights Commission and Office has been engaged in for the past 50 years, including the fight against discrimination, intolerance, and inequality. Karen, come on up. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for this proclamation, and I'm very proud that I'm here during this 50th year of service of this agency. I know that I don't look a day over 39, but this is a milestone that this community has sustained this work for 50 years, and I think you as legislators and also the community at large can be really proud that they invested in this work and that they continue to support the work of human rights throughout this county. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen. That's amazing. Pat Pryor, Chair of GO, would you like to come up to the podium?
I think I'll actually take your suggestion, Martha, and do the first part of this from right here, if that's okay.
Okay, great.
Okay. And I'd like to request that my remarks tonight be entered into the minutes. We have on her agenda a resolution, ID 4515. It's page 62 in your packet, expressing appreciation to volunteer members of the Tompkins County Special Committee on Broadband. Although we don't typically read the entire resolution, it's fairly short, and I'd like to do so before I move it. Whereas on August 26, 2010, the Tompkins County Legislature established a charge to form a broadband committee, known as a committee, to assess broadband infrastructure investment, deployment, and adoption opportunities countywide, and to make recommendations for improved broadband access to underserved and unserved areas of the county. And whereas the county, including 16 volunteer members with professional experience and technical expertise ranging from telecommunications to K-12 education to commercial and residential real estate to economic and community development to municipal operations, collectively used its best thinking to identify, evaluate, and propose solutions to address gaps in broadband accessibility. And whereas the committee met 30 times over a three-year period, all in open session, and sought input from the public, municipalities, state representatives, and technical experts. And whereas the committee's work included an ascertainment study, 8 community outreach forums, a variety of ad hoc presentations, grant application development, and preparation and delivery of 2 formal reports to the county legislature. And whereas the committee's work positioned Tompkins County as a statewide model for insightful broadband planning and public-private collaboration, which contributed to a Connect New York broadband grant award with a funding allocation ranked the 3rd highest in New York State, or in the state. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Tompkins County Legislature hereby expresses its deepest gratitude to the members of the Special Committee on Broadband for their commitment, dedication, and innovative thinking that will help many Tompkins County residents and businesses soon realize the benefits of high-speed broadband connectivity. And I so move.
Second.
Thank you. Terrific. It is a pleasure to have the record laid out like that. If you want to add anything, Pat?
Yeah, thank you. First, I'd like to thank you for giving me a little time tonight, Martha, to do this. In August of 2010, when Martha requested that I consider chairing a committee that would look into the possibilities of expanding broadband internet service, I had no idea what I was getting myself into. However, had I known then what would be involved, I would definitely say yes all over. Tonight, I would like to recognize and say thanks to a most incredible group of community volunteers without whom the project would not have happened. More on that in a few minutes. First, though, I'd like to give a huge thank you to this legislature and to the many county staff members who have provided professional advice and support to our work. The legislature, through our chair, Martha Robertson, recognized the need and took the necessary steps to initiate the project. Those of you on the legislature have been very supportive from the start, a support that is evident in the commitment of county resources, both extensive time on the part of certain county staff, and also the in-kind donation of space on a county-owned tower for placement of a key transmitter. A number of county staff, including Joe Marianne, County Administrator, Jonathan Wood, County Attorney, Marsha Lynch, Public Information Officer, Greg Potter, Director of Information Technology Services, and Lee Shurtleff, Director of Emergency Response, have made important professional contributions. Andrea Gibbs, Administrative Specialist, has provided and continues to provide clerical support. Most importantly, especially in terms of the time devoted to the broadband project, has been the assistance of Paula Younger, Deputy County Administrator. It is no exaggeration on my part to say that without Paula's experience and expertise, especially during the first 2 years of the project, this project would not have gotten off the ground. I repeatedly called on Paula to assist in guiding the work of the committee through its early stages of investigation. Paula, through her extensive background and contacts, was able to bring to the committee the advice and input of a number of experts in the provision of internet and a bit further on in the process in locating potential sources of funding. The broadband expansion project is only happening because of a substantial and continuing commitment of resources from Tompkins County. Many people are asking me where things stand with implementation. I can tell you that the poles on which the transmitters will be installed are here. Installation is beginning, and customers are being added to the service as we sit here tonight. Our primary corporate partner and the lead applicant for the state grant is Clarity Connect, Inc., known as Clarity. Chuck Bartosz, CEO of Clarity, estimates that complete installation of the project infrastructure could occur by July 2014, assuming there are no unanticipated delays. Though Enfield and Caroline were dropped from the project by the state, a re-engineering of the project and additional support from outside sources, including Black Oak Wind Farm, means those two towns are likely to be restored to the original coverage projections. As I've mentioned previously, the order in which service will be activated depends on the density of signups in any given area. If all goes according to plan, currently unserved and underserved areas will be activated by the end of 2014. It is important to continue to get the word out to those interested in obtaining service that they should sign up as soon as possible, preferably on Clarity's website at www.clarityconnect.com, or for those who don't have access to the internet, at 607-257-8268, because the number of signups determines when each neighborhood will be brought online. A key component of our planning for implementation is to encourage and promote the adoption of the new service by providing education for new users and for those who wish to upgrade their computer skills to take advantage of the opportunities that come with a high-speed connection. To that end, a subcommittee on education and outreach is meeting regularly to plan, coordinate, and implement strategies to connect users with the training they will need. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Pat, for everything. You didn't thank yourself. And Dave, and I would like to do that on behalf of all the residents of Tompkins County.
Thank you.
Pat, I have told a few people, more than a few people, that I think in your one term here on the legislature, you've done enough work for a couple of terms already. And in large part, this project has been amazing. I didn't realize it was going to involve what it did either. And we were incredibly fortunate that you took it on and kept it going. And it was very extremely complicated. And I remember many conversations that we had in the beginning. Success was not at all guaranteed. And I'm sorry, Rick, is Rick here? Rick Dietrich? Well, I remember Rick was the one who every time I saw him would say, "Oh, Martha, when are we going to get broadband? Why doesn't the county do something?" So I'm really delighted that we've gotten to this point, and it's good that Chuck came in just at the right time, perfect timing. I think, a perfect example of kind of the role of government, of putting resources together and having people collaborate across all different lines of public, private, et cetera, and gather the information that then enables the private supplier to move forward. And this is a great example of government doing something well and doing something really important. So I really want to thank both of you for all that you've done. And glad that you have agreed to continue on with the education and outreach part of this, and really grateful for your continued involvement.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any discussion before we vote?
Can I just mention one other aspect of this? Because for both Pat and the committee and Chuck, you know, it isn't always the easiest decision to stick with the local supplier. It's sometimes there's the assumption built in that the big national entities might have the resources and be the way to go. And I really applaud Pat and the committee, Dave, for being willing to consider working with the local supplier, and for Chuck for all these years that, you know, that you've been saying this is doable by, you know, us rather than having to go national with our appeal. So that's an aspect of this that I'm particularly proud of as well.
Frank?
Martha, would it be appropriate, since several members of Pat's committee, would it be appropriate to ask if any of them would like to add anything to what Pat has said?
Sure, that'd be great. Any of the committee members? What? Well, we're going to do something. You guys are reading ahead on the script here, addressing us was not something we had thought of, and I welcome. That sounds great. Tracy?
Thank you very much. I just want to take a second of your time this evening to thank the legislature for promoting this committee for the benefit of the entire county. It was a very engaging experience for all of us. I feel we learned a lot. But the most important thing I want to say is the unparalleled and peerless work that both Pat and Paula did really does deserve extraordinary recognition. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Tracy. Herf, you were the other one who said, come on, when are we going to get broadband?
Right. I really would like to thank the legislature for the support of the committee. Getting Pat to do the committee was an act of brilliance, and to get Dave to help and Paula, it really made everything work. When things looked the bleakest, Paula and Pat and Dave really encouraged us to keep going. And with Paula's resources, we learned a lot. We really had our eyes opened by, as Carol was saying, what the local could do compared to the national. So I really like to thank personally Pat for the leadership that she gave us all.
And thank you, Herb, for being one of the community activists that really put this on the radar.
Hi. I'd like to thank the legislature, too, and particularly Pat and Dave, who held this all together. I also want to go back to Carol's point about the local provider. I have known Chuck Bartosz since the 70s. Is that what it was? He was getting his master's degree in the physics department. I was working in the machine shop that was building the equipment and stuff, so forth. When I started my job at the Information and Referral Service in about 1988, Chuck actually hosted the first internet-based human services resource directory, I think in New York State, but I don't know for sure. It didn't amount to much, but we were really proud of it. So I just want to say this community spirit with Chuck Bartosz goes back a long ways. And thank you all.
Say your name for the record, okay?
Oh, my name is Ed Swayze.
Okay.
Ed runs the INR service at the Human Services Coalition. Thank you, Ed. Anyone else?
Ed and Tracy and Herb, the devil's in the details. The fine print in my suggestion that anybody speak is that you agree to serve for another 3 years.
Chuck, you're gonna let this opportunity go by? Is there anything you want to say?
Another 3 years, Herb? Go on, Chuck.
You don't have to, but...
Yeah, I got that for you. Actually, Chuck was a beginning member of the
God took off. But actually, I do want to thank the legislature and the committee in particular because it did make a difference. It's a private bid and a private bid to the state, but the state looked very favorably on us because they came here and met with the committee and saw the deep and wide commitment that the committee had and that it represented the entire community. There was somebody there from every town, different branches of government, and education, business, things like that. And that made a difference, and they told me it really did make a difference. So we were in fact, we were the highest-rated application in the state because of the commitment that was shown by just everybody and the committee in particular. I also want to do, as they say, a shout-out to both of you guys because you guys did a great job of keeping this together. And every time there was a speed bump, you guys did everything possible to fix it, and that was great. So thank you.
Thank you, Chuck. Chuck Bartosz, Clarity Connect. And Pat, you and Paula went to every town, am I right? Every town board and talked to...
We had 7 community meetings in different parts of the county and invited people to come and listen to them talk to us and talked about what we wanted to do. And it was a very satisfying experience.
Terrific. Well, thank you again. So are we ready to vote on resolution U, packet page 62? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
That's unanimous. Pat, thank you so much. Now you have something, Pat and Dave, to... Okay.
On to the next best part. At this point, can you hear me? At this point, I'd like to acknowledge and thank the following community volunteers who worked on the project. When I read your name, would you please come up? And Dave has a letter here for you. Dave has been our very able and committed vice chair of the committee. And has been very closely involved with the entire planning process and with carrying out the work of the committee. And just as I said previously about Paula, I would say the same thing about Dave. We couldn't have done it without him. So I want to give a big shout out to Dave for the work that you've done.
Thank you very much.
So, first on my list, Chuck Bartosz. There are a number of people on the committee who were not able to be here tonight. And one contacted me just before the meeting to say he's sick and can't be here. But I'd like to read their names just so they can be recognized. Larry Berger, who is a commercial realtor. John Bosak, who is a software engineer and a standards consultant. Scott Grimm, who is formerly with Internet2 and is now retired. Susan Curry, director of the public library. Rick Dietrich, supervisor of the town of Danby. John Levine, a writer and consultant. Dave McKenna, our vice chair. Tracy Matrano, director of IT policy at Cornell. Mike Pliss, Director of Technology with the Trumansburg Schools. Gary Reinbold, who is a freelance consultant. Victor Rendano, who is a veterinarian out in the Groton, North Lansing area. Herf Sheldon, Director of Research Systems at Cornell University. Yes, thank you. And Ed Swayze, a nonprofit organizational consultant. We'll meet you halfway, Ed. So that's it, folks. I just say again, thank you very much to the legislature, to the members of the committee, and to the entire county that has supported this project. Thanks.
That's a great accomplishment. Thank you again. And the committee will report to the GO committee. That's what we decided, right, GO?
Yes.
As a subcommittee of GO or an advisory board, but not directly to the legislature. It won't be on our agenda as it has been for the last 4 years. So, okay, but it'll continue in that form. So thank you all so very much. Wonderful to see you. Have a great holiday. I'm going to do a little bit of reordering of things, but first I'd like to go through privilege of the floor and then bring resolution Y for, packet page 67, the diversity and inclusion policy, because Larry has other places to be probably. You can stay as long as you like, but... So let's go to public privilege of the floor. I've got Deborah Cipolla-Dennis and then Joanne Cipolla-Dennis.
Hi, my name is Deborah Cipolla-Dennis, and I live in Freeville on 964 West Dryden Road. And make this really brief, I am very disappointed that there was not any assistance in changing the time of the meeting on December 9th, the Public Safety Committee meeting. It's currently scheduled for, I think, 3 o'clock or 3:30 in the afternoon, which is during the workday and makes it impossible for me to attend, as it does many people that have to work. And this request was made by a couple of different people. And I understand not changing the location. You know, this place is great for meetings like that, and you're able to record and publicize the meeting, and I think that's great. But changing the time so that the public can attend seems like a reasonable thing to do. So I would like for you to reconsider that. I know if you change the time, I can be there. If you don't change the time, I will not be able to come. Making it after 5 p.m., like at 5:30, would be great. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Deborah. Joanne?
Wow, maybe somebody was shorter than me for a change. Nate, were you up here?
No, I wasn't.
But I am, I think.
It's good to see you this time. So I'm Joanne Cipolla-Dennis, and wow, it's December. What a year. And so Dryden won her case again. That was a milestone. Yay, we remain unfracked. We passed the SAFE Act with some responsible considerations. Living wage was birthed. The insistence of the people went out once again. DOMA is dead. End of past, and I hope you pass the workforce diversity tonight. It's been a long time in coming. So, I came by in October to talk about the Green Building Alliance. You might remember that. And thank you, Carol, for coming to that. 127 people came to our house in one afternoon. It was astounding. And then the next day we went to see the Airship in Freeville, my neighbors, who I'm really mad at because now they have the coolest house in Freeville and I don't. So it was astounding. They had over 200 people in that afternoon, which proves to me that the people of this community want better building in their homes. They're concerned with climate change, and since that's what we do, come see us at the Green Building Alliance. And that night, Tim Josephs was here, and as a guy I don't know, I'm still a newbie here, and he spoke to you in a tone that I had not heard before about racism and about tone and about language, and I happen to agree with him. And I'm wondering if the legislature or any one of you in particular and individually has taken any training for diversity, for human rights, for racism, for homophobia, and all of those things amount to oppression. And if you did, I'd like to know when, and if you didn't, would you, if it was provided for you? And I wanted to let you know, I want to reiterate what my wife said. When you ask for the public to be engaged, and I really appreciate that, it's kind of the branch that we needed. We have this meeting at night so the public can attend. If we have things in the daytime, we discourage people from coming just because they have to miss work, and people are not going to do that. So I really would ask you to reconsider what's completely understandable about the place, and thank God for the people who run the technological recordings, because I go home and I view this, and I ask other people in the community that can't come here to please view it. Because when we ask you things, it's really not fair to just leave and then don't get your response. And the responses last time were really wonderful. Carol Chalk, Kathy, your words about democracy in action were really necessary, and it shows who you really are. And I'd like to know more of you in a little bit more in depth, but I don't hear your voices. Mr. McKenna, I've never heard you speak before. I want to. I won't bite you hard. So that's what I wanted to let you know, and I would really appreciate to get an answer on the time change. And if you're not going to do it, why not? And if it's a matter of rescheduling to accommodate when the people can come to hear what you have to say, which is the object of what we're doing here, then maybe we consider that. So thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Would anyone else like to address the legislature? Larry?
Good. So I think all of you know that I'm a member of the WDIC, and I have responsibly resubmitted my application to be reappointed in a very timely manner, which isn't my usual way to do things. But anyway, I'm here to talk about Resolution Y, the Diversity and Inclusion Policy. I'm one of the founding members of the WDIC, and at this point, I think I'm one of the only non-county connected people on the committee, and I can tell you that we have worked long and hard to get to this point, and particularly Leslin has worked long and hard to get to this point. Tompkins County has an opportunity to be a leader among counties of our size and place, but also among other counties and other municipalities in not only saying that they support diversity and they comply with laws and they do what they're supposed to do and we do what we're supposed to do, but that we want to do more. We want to create a inclusive and diverse workforce. And this policy statement with the policies and procedures will tell the county, both the legislature, the staff, but also the community, how the county intends to become more reflective of the community that it serves. And I wanted to say that there have been numerous discussions about this policy, both at the WDIC, at the working group that drafted the policy, at county committees of the legislature, and in various other places. And the conversations have always been collaborative and interested in developing a policy that's going to do what we want it to do. Developing these kinds of policies is very important, from the beginning commitment to diversity and the diversity statement to the diversity guidelines to this policy now, is a logical and straightforward way of preparing the county to advance what the legislature has already said it's committed to. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Larry. Anyone else? All right. Thank you, Larry. Well, let's go to legislative privilege of the floor, and then we will do the budget, the resolution under budget. Jim.
Thank you. Two items. This Friday night in Trumansburg, there is the, it's called the Trulysses Winterfest from 5 to 8. And it is it is put together by the community people, and it's a very good example of how room tax money is used to provide entertainment and fun for many people. My second point is the Temptations are at the State Theater on Friday night. I hope you have your tickets.
The Temptation.
Thank you, Jim. Pam?
Yeah, I wanted to speak about the Better Housing, the first-time home buyer program. I didn't think it was appropriate to talk in the middle of a public hearing, but I just wanted to say that program and programs like it are really remarkable. I mean, we attack problems on a big scale in terms of, you know, the government, the federal government. We need to take large actions in terms of solving some of our issues. And this program is a bread and butter program. This is a program that puts people into their first homes, that allows, I mean, you know, and we all talk about owning a home is the American dream, but it's a remarkable program. I've been on that committee for a number of years now, and every time you see these young families starting out who have managed to, they've learned how to save their money, they've learned taken all of the course to learn how to maintain a house, and that here they are, they're buying a house, and we've put 300 families into homes that way, and that in the end adds up to a tremendous number of people in our community, a tremendous number of families, and we need both kinds of concept. We need the big one and we need the smaller one, but this program, the first-time home buyer program, is an example of really quite a remarkable and very important program to our county.
Thank you, Pam. Anyone else? Mike.
Pam, I totally agree with you. It's a wonderful program that we've been doing for a lot of years. But my comment at the public hearing was intended to say, should we be thinking about doing other things with the annual application for the Community Development Block Grant of $750,000? And as much as it's a great goal to get people into their own homes and finance those homes, I think we need to think about the people who aren't anywhere near being able to finance a new home yet, that they're still trying to get by in mobile homes. They're trying to raise kids in substandard housing. They're trying to, we know that there aren't enough programming in the rural areas to help these people. Some of you who haven't been to some of the mobile home parks, I invite you to travel to Dryden or Newfield or Groton or other places and just drive through them sometime. And there's some very, very nice homes in them, but there are some very, very substandard ones. And I really think that the county ought to be taking a look at that, maybe as an alternative for a year or two, to the homeownership program, or maybe dividing the funding and using some of it toward mobile homes and substandard housing like that. So I wanted to mention that tonight. And the other thing I wanted to say is that with respect to the broadband committee, I wanted to join in everyone's comments about how great they did. I've been thinking about what we might be able to do for that committee in the future, and maybe we want to be on the leading edge of the Amazon drone package delivery system and be the first county in the nation to have that implemented here. No.
Oh, Mike, I was really hoping you would say, just kidding.
Makes me think of the Science Center egg drop. Anyone else? Leslin, then Carol. I'm sorry, Leslin, Peter, then Carol.
Thanks, Mike, for talking about the mobile home part of it, and certainly something I'll take a keen interest in. And thank you, Pam. I do remember going through the first-time home buyer program with Better Housing for Tompkins County. At that time, they didn't extend into the city of Ithaca, and I was interested in living in the city. And as a newbie, and I mean a newbie, fresh to the country, fresh to the community, everything, it really was a worthwhile program for me to go through and understand what it really meant to be a homeowner, not only in Tompkins County, but in the United States itself. So that was great, and I know of others who have benefited from the program. Thank you. 50 years of serving this community, doing human rights work, I didn't want that to just slip under the radar. We did a proclamation, but that is amazing, and it deserves more than an applause. I am hoping, I know that the state in its zeal sometimes to save a buck often will do things that will take away some substantial support for work that is important. And I know we no longer had our memo with the state. I don't know what was going on at the state level in terms of human rights. But I worked in a human rights office, and I just remember how important that work was to people. Lots of times, you know, someone's situation may not rise to the level of falling within the protected classes of discrimination, but we know that something funky is going on. And just because we can't pinpoint that it's because of race or class or sexuality or gender, any of those, it doesn't mean that someone is not being treated unfairly. And we often have to really become advocates in our human rights work. And our office has been doing a lot of that work in helping people to mediate and conciliate some of the things that are going on, or even just have a conversation with a landlord that may not want to speak to you, or with an employer. I just remember some of the situations of being involved with some of those and wondering how can people in good conscience treat others the way they have treated some of them. So I applaud our office for standing strong for 50 years. Often I've sat on this body, and you all know me, I speak, you know, what comes to mind. And, you know, our human rights office has been teetering as a place for potential cuts. And many of you had stood strong and said, no, we can't get rid of this office. Where will people go? And I do want to thank you all for always rising to the occasion to say that we in Tompkins County need to have our human rights office. It's been here for 50 years. The work has been amazing for 50 years, from education to, like I said, just support the person who doesn't know where to go, to helping with file those cases, and we need it here for another 50 years. And 39-year-old Karen, girl, you got 50 years more to be here and lead us even more so forward. I'm looking forward to housing discrimination coming here. I'm looking forward to that. I remember doing some of the mobile home cases. I'm looking forward to seeing if we can reenact something with the state. I remember when the state took sexual harassment cases away from us and sent them all to New York City. You know, see, if you had a sexual harassment case, God forbid, it got lost in the black hole in New York City. So we want to keep those things in our community because we don't want our folks getting lost somewhere when their rights are being violated. So I appreciate that work. I appreciate you being here and this body for standing up for human rights in Tompkins County and in New York State. Let's continue to be the model that we are for the rest of the state on what needs to happen. So thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. Peter and then Carol.
I'd like to just add my voice to Mike and whoever else spoke about mobile homes. It had never occurred to me that might be a good way to spend money to give people housing. It's clear to me, I don't know much about this, but I know a little bit about it, that a dollar goes farthest, I think, with mobile homes when you're trying to get a decent place to live for the minimum, for a place to live and own for the minimum amount of money. And I wonder if we do it, and if not, why we don't do it. And I don't quite know who to bring it up with, but I'm sure somebody in our organization here could look into that and report back to us what might be done. So
I would dare say the planning committee and the planning department, Megan, would be, I think, the one to address that. Got Carol, Frank, and then Pat.
Okay, well, apropos of those questions that were asked, I wanted to take the opportunity to recognize and tout the new Tompkins County website. The answers to these and many questions can be found at our it's an incredibly done website, TompkinsCountyNewYork.ny.gov, TompkinsCountyNY.gov. You don't have to remember the hyphens anymore to put in. On that website, organized by category, about living in Tompkins, learning in Tompkins, visiting Tompkins, business in Tompkins, and county government, each of our departments has in turn gone through and revamped much of the information and the accessibility of that information to people in categories and in the way that it's presented. And because at yesterday's planning committee meeting, we had a report about the fact that the county held its a public meeting about the scoping of the comprehensive plan. And while not a lot of people showed up to that, one of the hot topics was housing choices and what is it that we do, where is there still need, what are the implications of where of the choices that we make. And so I happened to today, as I was looking at the document that was handed out yesterday or earlier today about that, went to, as an example, the housing choices page of the county website that the planning department has just revamped. And I haven't had time to read all of it, but under that, one can look at a basic rationale, the 2006 housing strategy that was developed, and the resolution endorsing that strategy, which goes into great detail about what we identified as needs back then, an apartment analysis in Ithaca and Tompkins County, including a report for areas outside of the town and downtown, the affordable needs, housing needs assessment, looking to the future, and final report with appendices, the Tompkins County Homeownership Program, which is this one, which is, you know, one of these many programs that we run, tools for local governments to promote affordable housing with some models and some other ideas for the future, the in-commuter survey analysis, which, again, impacts housing, the renter's survey, actually four different renter's surveys, the database of subsidized housing units in Tompkins County, housing complexes funded through federal and state government, which I don't know whether that would include some mobile homes, and then the information on our housing fund, our community housing affordability program and community housing trust program. So that's just for starters, the stuff that's easy to find on our website. And so on this, like many other issues that come to us, the jail most recently, if people should stick with us and get involved at a level to understand the range of activities that we've got and that we've got to remain open to seeing where the gaps are. And again, for the upcoming year, as we closed out the year for the planning committee yesterday, we started a list of items to start to recommend to the new committee in the new year, and housing strategies was sort of at top of that list to reexamine, especially since the affordability and housing trust program would be slated to end at the end of 2014 unless we and our partners continue it. So I think this great topic that you raised, Mike, and that Peter continued, and I hope that that's something in the upcoming year we'll be able to do. And rather than save it for the report, I thought since it was a hot topic right now, I'd mention it and bring it back around to, because on every topic, on every item for our 27 departments broken into their many functions, there is a similar page on this beautiful new Tompkins County NY.gov website. So people should go to that.
Thank you, Carol. Frank, Pat, and Brian.
Thanks, Martha. Let me stay first with the theme of mobile homes. Just as a reminder, through the Health Committee, there are several programs that we do participate in. It's called the Home Repair Program, and mobile homes are included in that. Tompkins Community Action oversees a chunk of it. COFA oversees a chunk of it. And there are other programs, there's one through Cooperative Extension, that also participate in it. And we do a fair amount of home repairs. Better Housing for Tompkins County has its own program with regard to home repairs, and mobile homes do qualify. And we do, as I said, we do quite a bit of that now. So it's good. They're not a neglected item. It's not to say that there isn't more work that could be done, but just bear in mind that there are several ongoing programs that do help and do help keep people in affordable housing. Two other items. And to congratulate Pat and Dave on the broadband issue, I just want to, I can't let the opportunity go by to mention we have in the grassroots, those of you that are Farm Bureau members receive a publication called Grassroots. In one of the most recent ones, Senator Gillibrand, there's a picture of Senator Gillibrand with the chairman, the president of Farm Bureau, indicating how supportive they are of broadband. You know that one of the issues, and I hate to beat Joe over the head with this and Paula, but does the Universal Fund ring a bell? That is not an issue that's going to die at the end of this year. I can promise you that. And there'll be more to come because we are grossly underfunded as a state and in the Universal Fund recipient category. And that could go a long way towards helping sustain broadband. The third issue, and I have to defer to our state controller, Mr. DiNapoli. Those of you that caught the paper, the Ithaca Journal last week, saw an article in there about 25% of the property in the state, according to him, is receiving some sort of a property tax exemption, and it's hurting everybody else. Well, Tompkins County and the city of Ithaca were recognized in that article as having the city has, as you know, about 60% of the property receiving some sort of an exemption, and the county 60%. And the county, Tompkins County, is about 40%. Joe was quoted in the article as indicating that as compensation. We're grateful to the educational institutions because they were singled out as property owners that are exempt in a lot of categories. But the compensation is that they provide a lot of jobs. Well, the tie-in is if they're providing the jobs, and I'm glad Carol reminded us of the 2006 affordable housing survey, if those people are buying homes, and the home ownership program may help do that, there's a real thread that we need to stay on top of, that just receiving the exemption, the offset is that we're providing housing for some of those folks. We got to make sure they stay in this county. And if I heard Ed right, Ed correctly, not Ed, W-R-I-G-H-T, Ed correctly, we're not keeping up with the affordable apartments that were part of that survey in 2006. So one other piece of this is to stay on top of the state of New York to stop the effort permitting land banking and letting properties that ought to be paying property tax pay property tax. And it doesn't mean that it has to be wholesale throwing out the baby with the bathwater. It does mean that there's a process, and some of us started to do it. You'll remember Valeria Coggan, who was Jay's predecessor. We started an effort a number of years ago to try to come up with a procedure for at least stepping in and stepping up on land banking. Those of you that I receive not an exemption, but a favorable assessment treatment on my farmland because I'm actively involved in agriculture. The trade-off is if I sell the land for any purpose other than agriculture, I have to pay back 8 years' worth of property tax exemption. That's quite an incentive to keep it in agriculture, believe me, because they'll reassess the property based on what the highest and best use was. And if it's commercial, you have to repay that. That was kind of what we were trying to get instituted at the state level. Not a popular item because it involves not just educational institutions. It involves churches. It involves a whole slew of organizations that receive an exemption on property that they're not even using, and they don't intend to use for the purpose that they own it. So be aware that there's going to be more of an effort to work with Mr. DiNapoli to bring that to the floor of the state legislature. And I'll be in touch with Mr. Mariana. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Frank. Where would we be with that Universal Service Fund report? So.
Yeah, Karen and I are, we have volumes on that one.
Pat and then Brian.
I just wanted to flag something that was said in the public comment about the, earlier on, I'm not sure if it was public comment, about the mobile home, the needs of folks who live in mobile homes for help with housing and funding. That most of the programs, with few exceptions, and I think some of ours are some of these exceptions, do not provide funding unless the mobile home is on a permanent foundation. And that is a very, very serious problem for many people who live in mobile homes, because there are many, many mobile homes across the county that are not on a permanent foundation, and somehow it's almost as if people who live in those homes are beneath notice, as if somehow, you know, the fact that they may need help with their roof or their siding or their putting in better windows or insulation or whatever the, you know, need may be, isn't just as serious as if their mobile home, somehow it's not considered a home unless it's on a permanent foundation. And so I would just encourage the legislature going forward as these programs are being considered to try not to make that distinction, because the need is there regardless of what the foundation happens to be.
Thank you, Pat. I've got Brian, Peter again, then Pam again.
I was actually just going to answer the Sepulveda Dennis's and decision for the public hearing for, or not public hearing, public safety committee. Thank you. Meeting for next week, but I can do that under the committee report. So they're not here.
You got the mic. Go ahead.
Okay. Public safety is one of a whole host of committees that we have here. They're scheduled way in advance, actually at the beginning of the year. That's certainly not our only order of business that day. There are staff that we need to consider. For this particular meeting, we had promised that we were going to provide a very comprehensive explanation as to why we made the unanimous decision that we did on the jail renovation project, and we're still prepared to do that, and we are going to do that. I would point out that there's been other, let's call them hot-button items for our committee this year, and you know we agreed to address those in committee, and we did. The committee meets when the committee meets. So we will not be moving the time of the meeting, and we will not be moving the location for the reasons that Jim Blizzard actually has, thank you, Jim, has agreed to put this on cable access live and replay it. It's also going to be video streamed, so you can watch it at any time. It is designed to be an informational meeting, which it will be, and the chances of having any real lengthy public discussion, there's probably not going to be time for a whole lot of that. Hopefully there'll be a little bit. We did ask that some questions be submitted prior to, which I do have in front of me. And I just scanning over them real quickly, I think a lot of these questions are going to be answered during the presentation. But something tells me that this is probably not going to be the end of this discussion anyway. So we need to get a lot of the information that we all know out so that it's not misinformation and it's detailed information. And it will get out, and we'll take it from there. But the short answer, and I kind of wish they had stuck around because, you know, I don't want them to think that I'm wimping out and not giving them an answer. But that is the answer. So.
Thank you, Brian. Thanks. I hope maybe they're home in time. They might have turned the television on by now. All right, Peter, then Pam.
I'll pass.
All right, Pam.
I just wanted to go back to the mobile home topic that we seem to be talking about a lot tonight. I think that one of the biggest problems, or the two problems, one with mobile homes is that most of the parks, or many of the parks, the mobile homes are not owned. They are rented. It's the people who own the park that own the mobile homes. And that just presents a different set of circumstances. Not that we don't want to help those mobile homes, parks be healthy and safe places to live, but it's a different circumstance. The other thing that I think that we need, and I think that Mike's suggestion is a really good one. I think we should look at mobile homes and how we're handling this. But I also think that that we need to make sure that what we are looking at in terms of housing is consistent with our county plan, as our master plan is. We don't want to have homes of any sort being placed in areas that we're trying that is not part of a node or an area of focused development. And I think that was one of the reasons that the Better Housing First-Time Homebuyer Committee looked at working with people who were building houses, of thinking that perhaps that would be something, a different way that we could do this. And that would be similar to someone buying a mobile home and placing it on a piece of land. But we decided it was too complicated to do that without having a whole another set of criteria, and the committee just backed away from that. But working with people who live in mobile homes, who own their mobile homes, or who want to buy a mobile home, I think that that's just a great idea and a great focus for the future.
Thank you, Pam. Kathy Luce.
Thank you. There's a couple of things I want to brag about today, and one of them is when I first moved to Tompkins County, I was very impressed with the level of volunteerism that we have here in Tompkins County. It's inspiring, and the Ithaca Journal is doing a series of articles about it, and I've been personally proud and gratified to see two members of my community, Fall Creek community, immediately, and members of our larger community already included. One is Marty Kaminsky, who started Seniors to Go, I think is the name of it. It was a way that retired teachers could teach and mentor young adults. And Cora Yao, who was also mentioned for the many volunteer activities in which she participates. I brag about this not just to brag on my community and how wonderful it is, although, of course, that's part of it, but also to encourage people in this time of giving to think about ways that you can fit into your schedule, even those of us that aren't retired yet, ways of giving back in the community, ways that expand you, that delight you, and ways that add to all of our lives. The second thing I want to brag about that's kind of related is a holiday craft and food fair that's going to be held Saturday, December 7th, at Neighborhood Pride. Many of us know how this grocery store is doing its best to thrive in the community where, you know, we often are pushed to go to larger stores that have multiple multi-corporate sponsors and supports. In fact, this store is locally owned and has a bunch of parking right close by. It's also walking distance to many in my neighborhood. But here's what's going on. This food fair on December 7th, it's also a craft fair. It's going to be from 10 to 4 p.m. It's inside the store, and the public is invited, and guess what? Admission's free. One of the reasons I'm telling you about this also is because a lot of families in my neighborhood are really pleased at the number of free events that there are that are children-friendly. And this one is not just children-friendly. It's fun and educational. Local vendors will have craft items in the cafe area, including handmade jewelry, photographs, local photographs, handmade sweaters, and there's vendor spaces available. Cooperative Extension is going to, and this is really important and cool, Cooperative Extension has nutrition educators, and they're going to share recipes and samples of a healthy and affordable holiday roasted butternut squash dish. But get this, they're going to give a tour of the store, cooking matters at the store, at 1 p.m., and it's going to have tips on how to shop for healthy foods on a budget. You'll learn about comparing prices, food prices in units, so that you can find bargains, reading and comparing food labels. After the tour, each participant will get a $10 gift certificate to Neighborhood Pride. Yes, I said a $10 gift certificate to Neighborhood Pride, and a free workbook of tasty recipes and shopping tips, a reusable grocery bag, and a free calculator. The space is limited, so they're asking you to arrive early or call. This is Cooperative Extension phone number, I believe, 272-2292. And there's a whole other list of things in this. It's just, to me, it exemplifies what makes our community special in Tompkins County, having these sorts of things available where there's plenty of parking and it's walkably accessible to folks. It's a free event that you can also get nutrition counseling at and participate in with your kids. It's not to be missed. And I know that there's a lot of things to do in the holidays. It's great to find something that's good for you and that also will get you a $10 gift certificate to our wonderful Neighborhood Pride grocery store. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. Anyone else? Well, just to continue a couple of themes before I we go to the Budget Committee and Resolution Y, just for my report, to continue on housing, there was a meeting of the Housing Fund, the Program Oversight Committee of the Housing Fund, last week, and Pam is chair of that, and it was the last meeting for this year, for the fifth year of this partnership among the city and the county and Cornell University. As Pam mentioned before, it was next year is the last year for which funding's been identified. So we are sort of starting a conversation about, you know, what happens after. Is there a way to renew this commitment, a way to continue it? Question is, well, is there still need? Clearly, there is still tremendous need. We have projects that we know in the pipeline will be coming to the housing fund in the next round. And we also, in this round, it's a little complicated about how projects are funded, but we look at the viability and the feasibility and the need of a project, and then we figure out, should this be paid for out of the county's funds or the city's funds or Cornell's funds? There are different categories. Well, the county's funds can go for anything in Tompkins County. Cornell's funds, they like to have something that is pretty clearly related to their community, and the city's funds are designated only for projects within the city. So we've ended up with the county using up all its money, and there was a project that was only relevant for county funds. So what to do? We're probably not going to be able to fully fund that project. I want to say that the collaborative spirit that's carried through the 5 years of this whole program really came up because while Pam was leading the meeting over here, the city people huddled over there, and I'm like, what are they doing? They're interrupting, blah, blah, blah. Well, then Chris Pruhl raised his hand and said, we think we have an idea. So basically, they juggled money that had previously been allocated, and it's too complicated to explain, but they were able to make it so that we could there was enough money to put towards the project that was in front of us. It was for the Cougar Trails, for some of the energy amenities for where the Biggs project, Biggs property. To fully fund the application, and then so it all evened out. But it was really a very creative solution and a collaborative solution to make sure that the money really went as far as it could possibly go. So it was really, J.R. and Nels Bone, J.R. Claiborne and Nels Bone and Chris kind of worked out that problem right in the middle of this meeting. We got that done. So I assume that the planning committee in the next year will be looking at where do our resources come from that we might be able to commit to another round of years, I hope, for the housing fund. And I hope that the city and Cornell will also do the same because it's really made a tremendous difference. We see so much construction going up in the city or in the county overall. Not enough, but clearly, especially not enough that's affordable at sort of any median income or lower than median income level. So I think the need is still there in a very large degree. Since we met last, I went to the Southern Tier Regional Economic Development Council meeting held in Corning. No, the governor didn't come. we had the panelists there who were evaluating the the proposals from each council were there, and so there was a great dog and pony show, and you know, everybody, you know, was cheerleading our projects, and we think it is an excellent package of proposals, and we're very hopeful about the awards. December 11th, next Wednesday in Albany, is the presentation of the awards. I wanted to mention the part of the meeting was held at the Corning Museum of Glass. And if anybody, I had a chance to go for about 45 minutes, like it was not enough time to even touch the surface. If anybody hasn't been there or hasn't been there recently, you should go. It is breathtaking. It's a world-class museum. They have so many foreign visitors that they actually have foreign translators on staff for all the foreign visitors. One of the projects under the Regional Council proposals was to expand the parking garage so that they can bring in more buses because there's so many people coming in groups. It is an educational experience, it is a family experience, and it is an aesthetic experience you will just be amazed by. So I highly encourage that if you've got time looking for something to do with family members who come in for the holidays. It's not that, it's only like 45 minutes you should go. Only one other thing on my report. I have an appointment. Amy Starr Zook, to the Tompkins County Broadband Committee, and I will make that appointment. She has already informally been participating, and now she'll be a formal member of the committee. So, did I see a question? Yeah.
I was just wondering if we could commission a Tompkins County glass worker to create a Visit Ithaca glass piece to display in Corning. One needs hotels and delicious restaurants.
They've also got a proposal to build a hotel.
I have a question on the housing committee. As you started to talk about, or if you started to talk about the possible future of that program, one of the things that was talked about at the beginning and rejected in terms of it being the first go-round for the three entities working together was the possibility of putting those funds into a common fund and recognizing the fact that we are all one county, that housing anywhere in the county or the city serves Cornell University, that housing provided, the dollars provided by Tompkins County in Tompkins County serve people who live throughout the county, including in the city, and for the dollars put in by the city, that there are people throughout the county who come and use the city and work in the city, and so we really are all one entity with a one common purpose, and that that way without all that juggling. It's just as a possibility, it may not work, and I understand.
This is the first
politics.
Time in 5 years where it actually, the divisions actually, am I right, Pam, that where the divisions actually kind of created a situation where something might not get the money we wanted to give it. Am I right, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's been remarkably cooperative and conciliatory, and I think that is a great basis from which to have further discussions about going another round with this, and also the way the funds are distributed. I mean, I think part of what in my experience has been with both with this committee and with the TCAC committee is that you have people who, you know, you have to build a trust. The only reason that it works is that people have confidence that folks are going to be rational and sit at the table. And I think that the more we do that, the more likely it is that we will have these continue and to have more of them. So it's important that we have the kind of foundation that we have established at the with this fund behind us. I mean, I think it if they've got the bucks, I think that the inclination would be to do it again because I think they had a pretty good experience.
And I think just one more thing. I think the there have been a couple times when Cornell has been pretty flexible with its money.
That's right.
They really, it's not like they've only said East Hill or whatever. They've been really quite flexible with their
And more flexible as time went on. I mean, it really felt that they relaxed and they didn't feel like we were out to get them. And they were, I felt that they were really a full partner in the process along with the city.
So my thanks to Pam for leading that for 5 years. And that's been a great job. Just a second, Jim, one more. And that the application review committee, it's a group that vets the full documents, the voluminous materials for each proposal, that brings them to, and makes recommendations to the committee we're on. They've done an amazing job, and we will get those names so that everybody has we have that in fresh memory so that we can acknowledge those folks. Jim.
A little bit of knowledge that maybe someone knows besides me, but the senior director of creative services of the Corning Museum is Rob Cassetti, and he lives in Trumansburg, and he's a member. He mistakenly is a member of the village board. I don't know how he got there and why he chose to do that, but he's very good at that also. But he is the director of the Corning Museum. So.
And as a matter of fact, Fred Bond introduced me to Rob, and Rob was the one who was my guide for 45 minutes.
Right. He's very cool.
John Cowden, also a Trumansburger, he actually was the person who did all the demonstrations with the making the glass blowing for years. I think he's retired now, but so Trumansburg.
That's pretty much why I moved there.
You want to get a job at Corning?
All right. Thank you, everyone. If I could go to now, Jim, would the budget committee be doing this? It came through two committees, but it looks like it went through budget first. That resolution, why? Diversity and inclusion.
I have it.
Okay.
Adoption of policy number. I don't have a number. Diversity and inclusion. I guess it would be number one. We don't have a number. Kathy, do we have a number for that? On the res, it says there's a blank.
The policy number, no, not yet, but it'll be signed after adoption.
Adoption of policy number, diversity and inclusion, I would move that.
Second by Leslin.
Let me just mention that we at our meeting the other day, we had Larry Roberts, Shelly Michelle Nunn, Paula, other members, Anita Fitzpatrick, Leslin, of course, from the committee. Pam was there. Other people from the committee who had taken part in that over many years to bring it to this point. And it's been to GO. There were a few minor changes. Our committee accepted those changes, and we're putting this forward right now the way it is. And I would hope that all of you will, obviously all of you will support it. And I just want to thank Larry and all the people who've worked on this WDIC committee for many years to bring this forward. It's time to pass.
Discussion. Dooley and Leslin.
Maybe Leslin wants to make general comments first. I don't know.
I do. I just want to echo some of what Jim said in thanking the subcommittee of WDIC who worked on this, and I don't remember all the names. Paula can help me out. But it was a well-represented committee of union members, community members of WDIC, legislators, staff, and so who really took the time to work on this. If I had seen one more iteration of this policy, Paula would have lost an ear as I was getting ready to chew on people. So I do want to thank them from the bottom of my heart for putting in the time to bring this policy. It's really important for legislators to know that several years ago when we started a Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, the legislate the legislature, when we passed our diversity statement and accepted our diversity statement, also accepted and passed or adopted a set of diversity policy guidelines, is what they were called. This policy pretty much takes those guidelines and puts on some flesh on it and puts it in a form that we have in all, in the format of all our policies in our administrative manual. So it's not a lot of new stuff that just came from nowhere. It came out of what had already been passed, I think, in 2006 by the legislature. It also, we're thankful to bring it to this point, partly because as we reflect on our climate survey that we did, there were several things that came out from the climate survey, diversity policy being one of them. Many of you were there as we sort of dissected and digested what came out of that survey. And we had our own legislature department heads retreat and prioritize some of those things. Having a diversity policy that was clear was very important to our workforce. And so I'm very thankful again for the work that went into it, and looking forward to its adoption by this body as we go forward. So thank you very much, Paula, Larry. I see you two are here. Pam was on the committee. Jonathan, for your advice and being there. Joe, most definitely. Our personnel, for your involvement as well. And all of the staff for responding. My understanding is that the impact review process usually goes to department heads. And, you know, poor Paula, her eyes got really big when I said I want all 700 and something employees within Tompkins County to have the opportunity to respond. I wanted all of them because they all participated in the climate survey. And I wanted people to have the opportunity to respond. She says, who is going to tabulate those responses? I said, Joe? He said, we got it. Don't know, but it was important so that our employees know that we didn't just take something else and put it on the shelf. We didn't just do another survey and put it on the shelf, which is what we'd heard from many of them, but we actually are taking it seriously and value their opinion. When we are talking about inclusion, we want everybody included, and so it was very important. And they did respond. They did share their comments, and we took many of those into consideration as they fit with the policy. So, again, thank you, and thanks to the workforce for their participation in it.
Well, and you didn't thank yourself either, Leslie, but...
I didn't do anything except, Paula, don't bring me one more piece of paper, and I'll tell you that's what I did.
Well, I think, you know, it has been a long number of years, and we're really grateful for your leadership that's carried this ball and not let it go, and really... refined and listened and worked so hard with all parties. So thank you very much, Leslie.
My pleasure.
And I just want to ask, I hope that tabulating those responses wasn't so onerous that that's why Kevin went to look for another job.
I'm sorry.
He said, no, it wasn't. Okay. Julie.
Thank you. Leslie, I remember reading the very first draft, and it's like night and day, this last version. It's been greatly improved. I took the opportunity, preparing for tonight's meeting, to read everything on the agenda. It's not a good way to spend Thanksgiving, but I had the time. And so in looking at the policy itself, not the resolution, I noticed several things which I want to posit for your consideration tonight, and I think you all have in your red folders a document which refers to, in particular, pages 3 and 4 of the policy. So I ask you to look at that now, page 3. On page 3, there is Roman 2 policy. There are 3 bullets in the first paragraph, and the very first thing that is
typed there in boldface is wrong. It should say each employee and appointee is valued for his or her uniqueness and is treated with respect.
I'm sorry, Julie. I've lost which page three.
Page three of the document in your folder that is titled Suggested Changes Submitted by Legislator Kiefer.
Okay. So that's... So you're talking... So in the document, it's section two?
The document has four pages. Page three, there's a section two.
Okay. Thank you.
It's called policy. In the first bullet under that policy, there is a typo.
Yes.
It probably is the fact that Kathy has such overload and my writing is not ideal. So it says, it should say each employee and appointee is valued. And the reason I thought it was reasonable to add that is that the policy statement refers to appointed advisory groups. So that's one thing. Martha, it's probably prudent for me to move each one separately. And so I'd like to move that as an addition. If it's friendly, that's fine.
That's very friendly.
Yeah. So do I.
Okay, thank you. Then on the same page under letter B in number one, there's a new sentence at the bottom that says WDIC shall report to the legislative committee responsible for the personnel function. That language comes from the bylaws that this legislature approved quite a few years ago, mm-hmm. and I would move to add that or hope that's friendly.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Great. And now we're on page four. And there's section Roman 3 called procedure. And here, I can't help myself, I'm an editor, and I noticed that everywhere else in the document, WDIC is referred to as WDIC. But in this section, it's referred to as the WDIC. And I think it's reasonable to get rid of the. And I hope that that simple thing is okay.
It's fine.
I don't know. Is that okay with you?
It's not okay.
No, it's not okay.
We want to debate the.
So the substantive additions are in, actually, they're meant to be in C and D, not in B. I don't know how that got in there. In C, what is being discussed is the establishing and leading learning and educational opportunities. And to me, that reminds me very much of training, which I think it is. And so I think it's reasonable to add the Commissioner of Personnel, which is the official title, as someone else who should be consulted. So I'd like to move that in letter C.
Is there a second? Second by Jim?
Yeah.
Okay.
May I do that?
Sure.
So I finally got in touch. I left a message with the Commissioner of Personnel and heard back from her. And it was fine with her, she said. And so the reason I'm suggesting that is that I looked at this procedure for implementation and I thought in terms of not individuals but in terms of positions that it makes sense to involve. The county administration is one, WDIC is another entity, and the Commissioner of Personnel as a position seems to me to need to be involved in training.
Pam and Kathy Lewis?
So am I correct in what you said? I wasn't quite sure I heard you right. Was it that under B, that shouldn't be included in B?
No.
You just wanted in C and D.
That's correct. And I'm moving them separately.
Okay.
Kathy?
Over the years, I've had an opportunity to participate at Cornell and through the skilled trades and here at the county in various diversity initiatives. I've taken part in a number of trainings and have seen diversity evolve in what I think is a very positive direction, and that more and more people have come to an understanding of it. A best practice of any diversity initiative is that the committee or a person responsible for diversity report directly to the administrator. There are reasons for this. There's organizational reasons for it. There's reasons of accountability. And I believe that the policy as written and accepted by the committee should stand as is without this proposed change.
Could I ask, I didn't quite understand the reason that you gave. The Commissioner of Personnel reports to the county administrator, and that's why that shouldn't be in here? Did I gather that correctly? Or
no, you didn't.
Could you say again, please?
It's a best practice in human, all I can think of is services right now, human resources, to have whoever is responsible for workforce diversity and inclusion, and in this case it's a committee, report directly to the administrator. That's for accountability, and it's to avoid politicization of it due to other pressures that might be occurring. To put another department head of any kind in that line dilutes the possibility of workforce diversity and inclusion being free of those sorts of pressures and influences. I believe that that's reasonable, having seen not just in county government, but also in the private sector at Cornell and in other places, the importance that workforce diversity and inclusion has in assuring a clear and a spread of ideas that isn't impinged upon by other concerns at the outset. Sometimes, for example, a department head might have financial considerations, and we've all heard in the past people saying, for example, yeah, diversity is important, but I have to meet my bottom line. You know what? The county administrator knows as much or more than probably more than any department head about the bottom line, and I trust him. This is an example to take that into account. Because of all the disparate pressures that might exist on any department head organizationally and as a best practice, it's been encouraged to have such departments report directly to the main person, and that would be the county administrator. I strongly urge that, especially in this environment of scarcity and competing resources, that rather than have those pressures that accumulate on a department head impinge on the effectiveness of diversity and inclusion, we send it directly to the county administrator. And that's why I think that this is an excellent policy as written and should not be changed. Did I explain myself well enough for you this time, Dooley?
Let me just say something. I kind of agree with your last statement, which was that the committee and everybody else committees have gone through this. I might be happy with it without any changes, but in terms of the way I'm reading B, it's not that
I'm not doing B, C.
I'm sorry, C. It says that the county administrator shall establish and lead the function. So it's not that, and just that he, in this case, he should consult with WDIC and the commissioner of personnel. It's not that somebody else reports to the commissioner who is in charge, but the way I read it is the county administrator is in charge, but he's asked to consult. Am I right?
I don't understand what you're saying. What I was saying is that I don't believe in C, the phrase, and the commissioner of personnel should be included. I don't believe in D, that the phrase, and the commissioner of personnel should be included. In case anybody had any trouble understanding me before, that's my intent.
Okay, Dooley?
I understood your intent. I had trouble still, I'm sorry, following the rationale, because when I read C and D, I see as the county administrator is the subject of the sentence. The county administrator shall establish, the county administrator shall develop. And then the county administrator can consult with WDIC and the personnel commissioner. It doesn't give anybody but the county administrator lead authority here. So
okay,
that's how I read it.
All right, got Pam, Mike, then Pat.
Okay. I just wanted to point out that the personnel commissioner is on WDIC. So I don't know. I think it's sort of redundant to put that in there.
Mike Pett, Kathy Leslin.
I just want to know where we are. Has this been moved as an amendment?
Yes.
Yeah.
And was it seconded?
Yes.
Okay, then I'm. That's what I needed to know. Thank you.
Yeah, Jim seconded. Pat.
I was going to point out what Pam did about this commissioner being on the WDIC, but the other point I wanted to make in support of what Kathy is saying, and if I may make an attempt to paraphrase, and if I get this wrong, please tell me, Kathy, but I think the sense is that every attempt should be made to keep this from being subject to any of the inter-organization politics that may happen to go on, and that by having WDIC work directly with the county administrator without adding any other titles in there, certainly the county administrator can always consult with whomever they wish to consult with, whether or not we write it into the language. And it seems unnecessary to add the Commissioner of Personnel in here. And this is no reflection on any particular individual. It has to do with organizational dynamics. It's a much more straightforward relationship as to how that is going to, how those choices and decisions are going to be made. And I would support what Kathy said.
Kathy Leslin, Jim.
I was going to say what Pam says. Kathy Leslin.
I'll pass.
Oh, sorry. I heard Leslin. WDIC, the composition of WDIC includes the personnel department. It includes not only the commission of personnel, but also the deputy commission of personnel. So they're already there as part of the group making decisions around that sort of education and leadership opportunities.
Jim?
Maybe I'm being very thick here, but it really doesn't make any sense to me that you're doing something that has to do with people who work for you and potential people that might work for you, and you don't include the commissioner and personnel as one of those people that has to be consulted. They should be at the table with the county administrator, whether or not they're on the WDIC committee. So I will support Dooley's change.
Carol?
Well, I have a question for, I guess, which for Leslin as the chair of WDIC. You know, the committee spent a lot of time in thinking about each aspect of this, and I'd be interested in the thinking of whether the committee considered exactly where to put this and, whether this was one of the factors and whether the discussion tonight would change any of
not particularly for the very reason that I just said. I mean, the committee, we did think we had, as Dooley said, from the start we had everybody, their brother and the kettle named in here, and then we realized that those folks are already represented, and the county administrator or county administration also in taking the leadership in this will consult, with his staff on things like this. So we didn't feel that it was necessary to name a particular position. It's fine if folks want to put in there the personnel department as opposed to the commission of personnel. They're already there. They're already a part of the group that does this.
Peter, can I
just ask Peter and then Carol?
It seems to me this is a moot question. The Commissioner of Personnel is by statute part of that committee, and it says that he has to talk to the committee. So I don't see the point. I mean, it sounds to me like it's an amendment that doesn't do anything.
It doesn't.
And therefore, I don't see the reason for adding extra words.
I'm going guessing we could vote. How about we vote?
Yeah.
I think we know what we're talking about here, and people can decide. So the question is, Nir, how do we have to say anymore? Yeah.
I realize that I don't know who the members of WDIC are, and they're not part of this policy. So I have no idea who else is on that. So I didn't know the Commissioner of Personnel was a member and attends all those meetings. So that's interesting. I put this in because it's a specific position that, to me, makes sense to be involved with training and with metrics.
Can you explain that to me? Yeah.
All right. All in favor of this addition to Section 3, letter C, please raise your hand. Two. Opposed? That fails 2 to 13.
I will assume the same discussion takes place with respect to D, so I will not push that. I will move on to G, where, again, I read this afresh. I looked at this and saw that this has to do with who has expertise to monitor complaints and ensure the no tolerance policy is affected. And it struck me that the Director of Human Rights has that kind of expertise. I tried to understand why that might not make sense to add. I spoke with our county administrator who referred to a firewall, I guess, that had to be there once upon a time. But since, as was referenced by Leslin an hour ago, the state in its wisdom has not continued an agreement that we had with the state that allowed our local human rights director and commission to do initial probable cause investigations and then send them on to the state, but instead requires us to send everything. The first step is to the state, so that the need for separation doesn't seem to be there anymore. And putting this particular position, the Director of Human Rights, in here to help monitor.
Okay, I should stop. Let's
so I'm going move. To move it.
Usually we have the motion and then the discussion. Is there a second? All right, that fails for lack of a second. Something else, Julie?
No, certainly not. I appreciate the language in here as an editor. I don't appreciate the organization, but I told Leslin that I give up on that. It's been too hard with Lesson's absence in the holidays to deal with that.
Kathy Luce.
And I love you for giving up on it, Julie.
I just want to assume that under A, the insertion of the word that in the first line in 3 procedure on page 4 is also approved by the group as friendly.
What are you talking about?
Oh, okay. On page 4, you didn't include it, but I just want to... Yes. Under number 3 procedure on page 4, under A, the first line, the county administrator.
The map, yes.
I want to just say for the record that it sounds like that was friendly. Is that correct?
It is.
There was another missing change. I just noticed again, it probably is my writing and Kathy's workload. But in that same letter A, in the last portion, it says, as outlined in Section 2, Items 1 through 11, it should say 2B, Items 1 through 11. So the capital letter B belongs in there. It's pretty much ministerial, I think.
Okay with Jim. Okay with Leslin?
It is.
Okay. Is there any other discussion on the resolution or the policy? Pat.
I have a couple of questions because I see some other language that I'm just curious about. On page 2, under definitions, discrimination, I see two categories that are highlighted there, ex-offender and life-threatening illness. What does that mean?
Those were added at GO, at the earlier meeting.
So are they part of what we're voting on here?
Those were included in already.
Okay. And then my other question is on page 3. Is that the same thing for that, where it says WDIC shall report to the legislative committee? Okay. So I'm just checking this. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else on the policy? Anything on the resolution? Where are we? Page 67. All right. Are we ready to vote? All in favor of Resolution Y, please raise your hand.
Aye.
That's unanimous.
Yay! Thank you all.
All right, very good. Jim.
Thank you. Kathy Covert, if it's possible within the next few days, I would like to see a copy of the resolution that established WDIC and who the members are, if there were members assigned to the committee or, you know, I would like to see a copy of the resolution.
Who the current members are?
No.
The original?
How the committee was formulated, and is the legislator from Dryden on, is the commissioner of personnel, I mean, what's it made up of?
So you're looking for the current membership?
No, I don't want the membership. I want
the structure.
How it was formulated, when, and were there specific names? I don't mean people's names.
Positions.
I mean departments or positions mentioned in it.
It has changed, though, from the original.
I understand.
So you want the existing. Got it. Okay.
Thank you. And thank you for the unanimous support for this.
All right. I think now is probably a good time to take a recess, but I wanted to say two things. It feels like wrapping up a bunch of things here at the end of 4 years. And, you know, it feels really good. I don't know if it means, you know, sort of a deadline focuses the mind or whatever, but it's good. So thank you very much again, Leslin. And just one other thing I meant to say during my report, and you mentioned the 50th anniversary of the establishment of the Human Rights Office and Commission. I wonder if on the on Tuesday, December, which day, 10th, at the Dorothy Cotton Institute Gala and Dinner, that maybe that would be an occasion that at least that could be mentioned. And I was planning to go. I don't know if there's a way to insert that in the program, just somehow to acknowledge that it's the 50th anniversary of our office.
I'm being there and all that.
Okay. Terrific. All right. Thank you. Let us take a 10-minute break. If everybody can be back in their seats at 20 of. Thank you very much. All right. We're back in session. County Administrator's Report.
I know this will break your heart. I'm going to pass tonight. Okay. I'll talk. No. No report.
Save it up for next time.
Right.
All right. County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
I'm going to pass two.
Get it, Jonathan.
Question for the County Attorney.
Moving right along. What, Mike?
I had a question for the County Attorney.
Yes, sir.
Jonathan, we got your report. And just in general, has the new state requirement for notices of claim had any effect yet, or are we still watching that?
We have not yet received one. By the method of filing with the Secretary of State.
Okay.
So as far as I'm concerned, it hasn't had any effect on us, unless it's been filed and we haven't yet got it.
I see. Thanks.
County Finance Director Rick Snyder.
I'll do it here tonight.
I think we need to acknowledge our podium is back is in.
Try out the podium.
Order. It's great.
I'd like to review our October sales tax receipt, and this you can find in your packet under page six. It's on the table marked 2013 sales tax distribution summary, packet page six. And if you go down the line six and seven, halfway down, we're going to be looking at just the county portion. And I'd like to report that sales tax distributions for October for the county were up 3.05% compared to last year. If you move all the way over to the right-hand column for line six and seven, you'll see year-to-date tax distributions for the county's portion totaled $26,640,543 compared to $26,622 in 2012. And this represents an increase, a year-to-date increase of 2.46%. According to the sales tax distribution summary, we are at 82.4% of budget. And if you look at where we should be, that would be 83.3%. So we're within 1% of budget as of the end of October. And that concludes this report.
Thank you, Rick. Any questions?
Does this include internet sales?
Yes, it does.
So I think that says everybody should go shopping. Is that what you're saying?
Buy a car.
We hope that November, December will be very robust months.
Good. All right. Thank you very much, Rick. All right. I'm going to go to first. Okay. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? All right. The consent agenda. Everybody sit back and relax. I've got a little reading to do. So, but holler if you have anything to come off. Resolution A, ID 4528, establishing standard workday for elected and appointed officials, finance director.
Revised.
Why don't we just, if it's revised as adopted by committee, assume that that's what we're doing, okay?
Yeah.
Resolution B, ID 4532, authorizing a public hearing concerning Local Law C of 2013, a local law authorizing the leasing of real property no longer needed for public use for a term of up to 99 years. Resolution C, ID 4494, designation of newspaper. Resolution D, ID 4493, correction of errors. Resolution E, ID 4491, date of 2014 organizational meeting. And I'm going to just stop for a minute and make sure everybody knows and the public knows that if we pass this on the consent agenda, our organizational meeting will be January 2nd. It will be Thursday, January 2nd, not the first Tuesday or the third Tuesday. It will be the first Thursday in January at 5:30. Just want to say that. Resolution F, ID 4481, authorizing acceptance of a New York State grant to replace snow removal equipment, ramp dozer, Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport. Resolution G, ID 4480, authorizing acceptance of a New York State grant for design of a terminal, apron expansion, Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport. Resolution H, ID 4479, authorizing five-year contract extensions with the Avis Budget Group and Barrett Transportation Service Incorporated, DBA, Hertz Rental Cars, Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport. Resolution I, ID 4476, authorizing a 10-year extension to the Air Service Board and adoption of amended bylaws, Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport. Resolution J, ID. Resolution K.
Off. No, I'm sorry. Beg your pardon.
I was just swallowing, so I wasn't waiting for somebody to say off. All right. Resolution K, ID 4509, delegating to the finance director of the County of Tompkins, New York, the power to authorize the issuance of and to sell $10 million in revenue anticipation notes of said county in anticipation of receipt of state aid during the fiscal year of said county commencing January 1, 2014. Resolution L, ID 4508, changes in positions, various departments. Resolution M, ID 4495, implementation of the 2014 budget, departmental fees. Resolution N, ID 4492, authorization to disperse funds, county administration. Resolution O, ID. Resolution P, 4489, authorization for finance director to make year-end transfers, appropriations, and budget adjustments as required. Resolution Q, ID 4488, town and city budgets and printing of tax rates. Resolution R,
off.
Resolution S, ID 4485, authorizing payments for community college operating budget, and Resolution T, ID 4484, implementation of 2014 Tompkins County budget memberships. I have a motion on the consent agenda. No, you're right. Hold on. Appointments. Thank you, Kathy. Appointments also on the consent agenda. Family Court Advisory Council, Paul Rudy, Marissa Matsudera. Criminal Justice Advisory Alternatives to Incarceration Board, Amber Driscoll. Emergency Communications Review and Oversight Committee, Mark Conrad. Advisory Board on Indigent Representation, Christopher Colosi and Deborah Dietrich. Traffic Safety Committee, Fernando de Aragon. Stop DWI Advisory Board, Kenneth Lansing. Office for the Aging Advisory Committee, Elizabeth Ellis. Personal Emergency Response Service Advisory Board, Nancy McKeon, Mary Harrington. Strategic Tourism Planning Board, Ken Jupiter, Lynette Schofield, Ann Gossin, Ian Golden, John Gutenberger, Ethan Ash, Christy Agnesi, and Michael Mellor. Now, a motion on the consent agenda, moved by Carol, seconded by Frank. All in favor, please raise your hands.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. That's unanimous. Frank.
Just a general comment for clarification, and maybe Joe or Rick can answer this. Resolutions L, M, N, well, we have to do O. The ones that deal with the county 2014 budget, like the changes in positions, those all reflect what we did during the budget season.
That's correct. Yep.
Thank you. I think the only reason I bring that up is the public doesn't know what we just did.
Okay. Will.
Thank you, Martha. Moving our organizational meeting to the second, I understood. Will there then be a regular meeting the following Tuesday, or would that be in lieu of that?
It's not being proposed, no.
Okay. Thank you.
Wait. What's not? I'm sorry. Can I clarify?
There's no meeting January 7th. That's the first Tuesday, right?
I think
so. January 7th. It's going to be the second instead.
And then our next meeting would then still be January 21st?
What? 21st.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Economic Development Committee, Will Burbank, Chair.
Thank you, Martha. Well, our committee has not met since our last meeting, and we were scheduled to meet this Thursday, but actually decided, because we had relatively little business and several of the special presentations that I was hoping to have ready for us were not quite ready to happen. So we'll be having a special meeting the afternoon of our December 17th meeting. Meeting at, I believe, 3:45, and just no, I think it's 3:45. Is that right? Yes, I believe it is 3:45. Kathy,
I thought it was 4:45.
No, it's 4:40.
It is 4:45. Thank you. I'm sorry. I'm a little jet lagged myself, so thank you. Thank you for that clarification. For just a few items related to tourism, and that is my report. Are there any questions?
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Will. Capital Plan Review Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
Probably the Human Services addition project needs to be handed off to the, I'm guessing, the Facilities Committee. Probably that needs to be done officially, and so I would request the Chair to indicate that to that committee, if that's the proper one. I don't see a need to have a meeting in December unless the county administrator or anyone else on the committee feels there's a need to meet. I think we're pretty much done. And we'll be seeing what happens next year with respect to possibly the chair at that time will decide if there will be a special committee to continue on with the old library REIF.
All right. Could you remind us on where the RFEI stands with the schedule?
I always get those letters mixed up.
Yeah. The schedule?
It's going out this month for the requests, and then we expect to have them back by March.
Anything to add, Joe?
No, only that we're kind of working against a self-imposed deadline. We'd like to get the RFEI out by December 13th.
and planning is working on that.
Okay. All right. So then I guess I would just say I would like to designate that the oversight of the ongoing oversight of the Human Services Building expansion and renovation and expansion be managed by the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee from this point on, and as other building renovations and expansions generally go through that committee. So without objection, let's just say that that's done. All right? Thank you.
Thank you.
Government Operations Committee, Pat Pryor, Chair.
Yes, thank you. Government Operations Committee met on Tuesday, November 26th. We had several discussions, which I think will be ongoing, so I don't think I need to say a whole lot about them right here. Now, tonight, we also passed a number of resolutions that we've already dealt with here this evening, and a number of them had to do with reorganization and routine kind of matters that we take care of at the end of the year. However, there are a couple of items that appear to be kind of time-sensitive, and we do feel we need to meet again. So the GAO committee is going to meet on Monday, December 23rd at 10 o'clock.
All right. Thank you, Pat. Any questions? Thank you very much. Planning, Energy, Environmental Quality Committee, Carol Chalk, Chair.
Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee met yesterday. As is our usual practice, most of the action items, including a bunch of appointments and resolutions, will come as a regular part of your packet for our next meeting on the 17th. We also will have a special meeting at 5 o'clock on the 17th. So, Will, if you anticipate longer than 15 minutes on the Economic Development
Committee, we could be at 3:45.
We should... We could move it back to 3:45, and that is for purposes of the CDBG grant application that, as we heard earlier this evening, is on a tight deadline, so we need to decide whether to move that forward to the legislature for that night. We then will have our regular meeting as scheduled. The planning committee is scheduled to meet January 6th at 3:30. So unless the new chair is seated and reconfigures those committees and committees' times gets rescheduled, the assumption is that we will meet then. Staffs felt that they had some business that might need doing. So unless it's changed last minute, and that would be announced on the 2nd, I suppose, if that happens. In business that doesn't require action, we already talked here in some depth about the comprehensive plan update and scoping meeting that they had and the issues that came up there. And we also heard something about the housing fund round 8 that, the report from the POC is that they will have something to move forward to us in the future from that, but they weren't ready with the paperwork for that yet. And then two other items. Interesting discussion. The county, as it does with its aquifer studies, helps each of our towns as they go through studying their aquifers, and we share the cost with the towns. In the town of Danby recently, the aquifer study came back with a test well with one well with a problem that needs to be capped. They don't think that it was due to any horrible reason, but there was a higher level of a substance in one of the wells that shouldn't be used anymore, and it'll cost $1,580, and the town of Danby is asking, is that something the county would be willing to discuss sharing? The committee was not enthusiastic about it, and we gave it another month to think about if people have strong feelings. Our policy in the past has been to help with the testing of the wells, and to leave it up to the towns to deliver the services that are needed. And usually nothing else is needed because the wells have tested just fine. So if people have the input they'd like to give to me or after the first of the year, it doesn't need to be resolved right away, but it is something of an expense. And there's not a set line in our budget for that. And then we had a lively third report from the Environmental Management Council Plastic Bag Initiative. As you'll recall, they came to us starting back in July with a proposal or a request that the county consider doing something to get these the T-shirt bags, the bags, the point of exit of store bags out of the waste stream. There's some interest in it. It would be, you know, it's complicated. It's been done by many, many other places. And we asked them to go back in July and hold some public meetings and do some more study, but give us some more information about where, how this is done in other places. Is it a tax? Is it a fee? Is it a ban? Is it what items are included? And so they have come back twice now with additional information, once yesterday at some length, and they've got a very lively group, diverse group. They've got young kids and elderly people involved. They have worked closely with the Chamber of Commerce, which is going to help them create some additional focus groups with businesses. But they did... They did want to know what would be a process going forward. You know, at some point, rather than keep asking them for more information, they would like us to decide how and whether we might want to move this forward. They're willing to do more work on it if they get some indication that those in the legislature might take seriously an attempt to bring it forward. So that's something going into the new year. The committee didn't resolve anything. We discussed that and acknowledged that would be a good thing to figure out how to do before asking them for too much more work. That said, we did ask them for some more work. There's now quite a packet of information that could, I think, be turned electronic. The proposed original resolution from July and materials that they submitted to us then, along with the materials that came to us in our packets yesterday, might be worth turning into one electronic PDF and sent out to legislators maybe sometime after the first of the year. That could be done so that people could see more for themselves, all the many, many places, countries, counties, and cities across the country that have been dealing with this. And I also noticed after that New York State is talking about doing something possibly on a state level on that. So other than that, all of the activities, I believe, will come for action at our next meeting.
Frank?
Carol, back to the Danby request for the $1,500. A couple of years ago, we brought forward a proposal where the county would participate in retesting wells that we had participated in helping to drill. And the objective was to provide updated baseline information, because we as a board and a legislative body had taken positions regarding hydraulic fracturing and the information that those wells could provide updated information on the status of the water sources in those towns. We have a two or three wells in Dryden, two wells, I believe, in Caroline, two wells in Danby. We are doing one in Newfield right now, and we're about to do one in Enfield. I think after the first of the year, it may be wise to revisit that proposal to see if Todd Miller, who's since retired from the USGS, was helping us put something together through the WRC. and we may want to bring something back to the WRC committee or whatever the successor committee to planning is that would be studying that, because it does provide the most current information regarding the condition of those wells.
Yeah, I think the issue on this one was that the role that the county signed up for and agreed to pay for was to share the testing of the wells, and the questions came up about precedent. If there are more wells that start in the future to test with problems, you know, do we want to be setting a precedent? I mean, this is it's bigger than just this one well decision.
With the increase in sales tax receipts,
we could
probably cover something like that.
Could I add something to that? I mean, the other concern is that it's not consistent with what the money was set aside to do. It is something outside of that.
That's right. That's why it was a new proposal.
I'm sorry?
That's why we brought it forward. It was about 2 years ago we brought it forward.
Right, but I'm just saying in this situation, that was one of the concerns that the committee raised.
And I will also add that this has not risen to the level yet of a formal request from Danby. It was sort of an inquiry, you know, as to what we had. So I just thought I'd bring it to our attention here since it's not in the budget. And if people had input, they could give it to me or others.
I'll give it to
between Karen. Now and when it comes back up.
Okay. Any other questions for Carol?
Thanks, Carol.
Thank you, Carol. Broadband Committee, Pat Pryor, Chair.
I have no further report.
All right. Thank you very much. Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, Jim Dennis, Chair.
One second, Martha. I'm going to time myself on this. I'm kidding. The first item is budget appropriation adjustments for retroactive wage increase for the Deputy Sheriff's Association, and I would move that.
Second by Brian. Discussion? All right, that's a short roll call.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Would anyone wish to be recorded as no? That's unanimous.
Resolution W, establishing the apportionment of additional mortgage recording tax proceeds for mass transportation, and I will move that.
Seconded by Pam?
Yes.
Yes. Can't imagine. Jim?
I think we're done with this if this passes, right? Okay.
Frank?
The last resolved regarding the 15% portion. Just to make sure that the county's contribution to TCAT will still be, under the agreement, the one-third, 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 plus whatever we do in capital, that it's not going to be limited to whatever the 15% comes back to. That'll just be a contribution towards the county's commitment.
That's correct.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you for clearing that up, Frank, or asking that question.
All right. This is like the fourth time we voted on this. All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
That's unanimous.
Resolution X, accepting the report of the Livable Wage Work Group and extending thanks to all who contributed to the report, and I would move that.
Seconded by Pat. Discussion. Dooley.
I hope you all have in your packet a version with suggested changes that I submitted. Rather than move them all together, I would like to just go through them one by one. I hope you'll be patient with me, Jim. Line 31 is to get rid of the word has. Most of the other past tenses in here are simple and not compound, so you don't need the word has. I hope that's friendly.
The next one, well, I should say I discussed these changes with the county administrator to make sure I wasn't changing anything radically. And he agreed that using the word approximately before three quarters is accurate because it wasn't precisely three quarters. On the next page, line 7.
Jim, is that friendly? Pat?
It's the holiday season.
What?
It's the holiday season.
Pat?
It is friendly.
Pat, does that work for you? Is that okay?
Yes.
Okay.
On line 7, I frankly can't remember my discussion with the county administrator anymore. I think that... I'm going to suggest the word apparent go in before high levels because to the extent that everything else is approximate, this can only be apparent. It can't also be precise. And line 8, it said a survey, which suggested there could have been a second survey, but in fact it's the same survey, so a gets replaced by the survey.
Pat, you would go with those two? Jim's okay.
Yes.
And line 22, the work group isn't now transmitting. It transmitted it months ago, so this becomes a past tense. That's all.
Oh, okay. Anything else? No, that's good. They're all very friendly.
All right. Anything else? Carol.
I applaud the committee for having done a lot of hard work.
Thank you.
I have one further correction that I would offer first. On line 39, in that whereas, where we're talking about a fifth, where the 15% survey return rate, to make assumptions without pointing out or specifying more clearly that three quarters was of that sample, I'd just like to offer the following wording. Approximately three quarters of, and I'd insert the words, that sample of county contractors. That be friendly? It was a 15%.
But in any survey, and you look at a sample, then you extrapolate the results of that sample to the larger group. I think that's what this is trying to do. It recognizes, and the committee spent time to make sure that the sample size was shown in here, that 15%, but then was okay with the language that says, based on that sample and that sample size, it's reasonable to extrapolate that three quarters pay the living wage.
Did we have a methodology to sample a certain subset, or did we just send out surveys and we happened to get a 15% return rate? Those are very different things.
We sent the survey to all contractors, county contractors, electronically. So the response was 15% of those 400 contractors were surveyed.
Peter?
In situations like this, you can never get rid of bias, and bias means that the people who answered aren't like the people who you sent it out to. But you do the best.
You can't assume that they are.
You can't assume, okay? But you do the best you can. And what you do with that 15%, you look at them and look to see whether it looks like to you that that is sort of what a random sample is. That's not foolproof, but that's what was done, and I'm pretty sure that's what's always done. When you take a sample and extrapolate it to represent the whole group. So this is the normal process of doing that, and I don't think that you should limit it to say that all it shows is what the sample did. There's judgment that went into believing that the sample was, in fact, representative.
Jim?
All of this is very enlightening to me, but is there a motion that I haven't heard yet?
Okay, Carol, you have a suggestion.
I had a suggestion that we add the word, three words, three quarters of that sample of county contractors.
Is there a second for that? All right, that dies for lack of a second.
Okay. We saw somebody thinking.
No. I'm in charge here.
So, okay, well then.
Okay,
then
Kathy Luce had her hand up.
Well, no, I was not done. Because now I would like to make my statement about the motion itself, if I may. Okay. So the charge to the committee, as stated in this resolution, was to ensure that the policy aims of the county were being achieved related to the living wage. And I think that is a really admirable aim. I would like to actually have, I can't support the resolution as it is, and I'd like to have in the minutes these thoughts about why not. First, I don't believe that the county's livable wage policy aims are being adequately achieved, and I'd prefer to send the report back to the committee and ask that they provide more specific recommendations about the most appropriate contracts within the budget for us to address first. And second, you know, I appreciate that what's come out of this committee is that we'll finally develop procedures to implement the 2003 policy. That's a good thing. But I'm going to vote against acceptance of the report because I don't believe it does enough to make a dent in living up to our responsibility to become the living wage employer we claim to be. I think it's great we've made a start. I think it's even better that we've put something that's the part that I wanted in the minutes. I think it's great we've made a start. I think it's great that we've put something in the budget to start addressing this. But for me, the way I understood part of the charge to the committee was to start achieving more of our aims, not just instituting new procedures. And so I don't see the work of the committee as being entirely done. And I'm not going to move to decline the report. We have three options.
Oh, please do.
We have three options when reports come back to us. You know, one is to decline it. I would just ask the committee to do some more work. One is to accept it, and one is to adopt the recommendations. And I am pleased to see that we're not moving to adopt this since there's not much to adopt yet. But I do hope that there'll be something to adopt in the future. And for the reasons I stated, unless somebody really convinces me of something else, I just can't vote for it, although I support that we're trying to address this and that I believe that the public coming to us the way they have has made a real dent already in our attention to our contracts as we negotiate them.
Okay, Kathy Luce, Brian, did you have your hand up?
No, I couldn't pass away. No.
Thank you, Martha.
Hold on, and then Peter and Dooley, but first I have to ask, Joe, did you have a response? Or?
No.
I'd rather let the legislature respond. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I'll allay some people's fears and tell you that I'm not going to try to convince Carol that this should be implemented, approved, or adopted. I served on the committee. I think it was a good committee. We came from a lot of different viewpoints on it. And even though I don't necessarily believe that what we're doing is what we'd like to be doing, in other words, I don't believe that our current policy is consistent with our values. And I think that in many ways the committee itself did yeoman's work in trying to define and trying to articulate what the various issues were. I think that the committee's work is done because simply because we're not implementing or approving or adopting this. What it says is that the county administrator is going to work to see how we should go forward and work to see how we should move forward to attain our goals. At least that's how I read it. And that allowed me, even though I didn't think that the conclusions that we came to all the time were as inclusive as I would have liked, actually the resolution is an accurate representation of our work. So I'm willing to support this. I hope that everybody here understands that, and I bet you do, that I'm a strong supporter of living wage and that I feel that the committee, although it completed its work, our work as a legislature isn't finished if we really want to move toward living wage. I believe that it's complex, but it's not insolvable, and I'm confident that in the next term, if not in the next 5 minutes or a year, that we'll, Joe's laughing at me, this was a lot of work, that we'll get there. And it's never fast enough. It's not fast enough for me. And I bet it's not fast enough for some of the folks that are bringing home paychecks that qualify them still for food stamps or social services. Knowing that, I still think that the committee did a terrific job, and I think that we're moving towards something, and we're doing it in what y'all might laugh at, that I sometimes say in iterative fashion, and that is we're revising as we go, trying to figure out how to make this fit our circumstance and do it in a rational and yet compassionate way that's consistent with our values. And I hope somebody can summarize some of that and put it in there, because originally when the committee was done with its work, I issued a statement that some of y'all may have read that was in the Ithaca Journal, basically saying that if the committee, the summary of the committee's work as I understood it, was enacted as policy, I felt that it would be a problem, because as we came up with it, if it was implemented as policy, I believe it could be misinterpreted to actually lower some of the wages that we're paying to some of our subcontracted employees. I'm relieved to see that that's not the case, that what we're understanding is that this is part of the foundation that's been started a while back and is going to continue, and we're going to come up with something that is good for the taxpayers, is good for our local economy, and that respects workers' rights and needs to attain a living wage. Thanks.
I agree wholeheartedly.
We've got Peter, Dooley, and Jim.
I'm going to try to convince Carol to change her mind and vote for it. You know, there's an old aphorism which I think is extremely accurate and comes up all the time, namely, the best is enemy of the good. When you can't get the best, okay, then you say the hell with it. And I looking at this, I think everybody on the committee realizes the injustice of not paying people a living wage. On the other hand, the committee came to the conclusion that we could not snap our fingers and make that thing go away. That would be the best. And so you have two choices. One is forget about it because you can't do the best. And the other is to say, well, what can you do? Which is not the best, but it's the best that you can do of your options. And I believe that that's what we're doing here. And one of the things that we really have to understand is how severe is the problem, and we don't really know that, partially due to what you say, that we only know what 15% of the contractors do. So we really don't understand the situation. But at the end of the year, we will understand the situation a whole lot better than we do now, and I think that that will advance the cause. So presumably, when you vote against something, it's that you don't want it to happen. But that would be a mistake, a bad mistake.
I've got Dooley, Jim, Frank.
Carol, I did not second your motion. And that's what I wanted to speak to, because I thought your clarification of different uses of the word sample was useful. I thought Joe's characterization of how he looked at this was accurate, and it would have been misleading to add your words, therefore, to this resolution. With respect to the resolution itself, I doubt that I can persuade you more than Peter could, but I'm supporting this resolution not because I was I felt that the committee had produced as much as I thought was needed to take us to the next step. But because the administration is already taking some of those next steps that need to be taken, I agree with Peter that in some number of months we will be much more knowledgeable and be able to design something, I think, that will get us forward quicker. So I just wanted to explain to you why I didn't sort of
Jim.
I want to say thank you to Joe. This whole livable wage issue has not been looked at in 10 years. And we started out with a request from people at the back of the room, and we moved to looking at, I think, pretty comprehensively all the things that we're involved in contracts, and we've developed some decent information that we can move forward with. And were it not, and this was one of those committees that Joe was the chair of, and actually started on time and ended on time. And so I applaud him for that. And he was able to get a wide variety of people in the room and come up with a report that we have. And I for one, am not going to try to convince anybody to vote for it. You have to look at it yourself and decide your own vote. I guess when the title of a resolution says accepting a report and thanking those who contributed to the report, if you vote no, I guess it means whatever that means when you look at the title. So I would hope people vote for it.
All right. Thanks, Jim. Frank, Leslin, Brian, then Carol.
I'd like to move to call the question.
Is there a second? Second by Jim. Will, I'm sorry. All in favor of calling the question? Opposed? That passes 11 to 4. We are voting now on the resolution with the small amendment that was made. All in favor, please raise.
Do we have a roll call, please?
Sure.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
No.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes.
Ms. McAsey?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
No.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Proto?
Yes.
Ms. Pryor?
Yes.
Mr. Robison?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
13 ayes, 2 noes.
That is, another package wrapped up. End of this year, end of this term.
Yeah, thank you for that. We had some items pulled off the consent agenda under budget.
Right? Seriously, before we go from this, can we get the names of all the task force members and do something next meeting?
That would be easy and nice to do, yes.
Okay. Many of them have changed their name and moved to the Caribbean.
All right. Yeah. Were we going to, did we say we would do that for WDIC too because of passing the policy?
No, because WDIC continues.
Okay. All right. We'll just thank
you. No need to.
All right. Thank you. All right. So, Jim, yes, you have J, O, and R.
Okay. Do we need to read those? Or?
Okay, you gotta move them. Yeah.
Workers' compensation budget and apportionment mutual self-insurance plan, and I would move that again.
Second by Mike. Discussion? Dooley, you pulled it off.
I did. I looked at the resolved, which talks about, in line 11, their equalized valuation, and I thought it would be useful to explain a little more what that was.
I got the language from Joe with Rick's concurrence. They're equalized taxable real property valuation. So it's more for the benefit of the public than for us.
Okay. I'm fine with that.
Mike, is that okay?
Yeah.
All right. All right. With that addition, ready to vote? All in favor of Resolution J, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous.
And what was the next one?
Oh.
Oh.
Where did it go? Where did it go?
Authorization to sign checks.
Authorization to sign draft county administrator. I'm guessing I see the word checks after. I will move it with the new word checks in parentheses.
Is there a second? Second by Pam. Discussion?
Well, thank you for doing that. I know that that's not how it came out of committee, so, but I'm assuming you would support this change.
I will, absolutely.
As Rick pointed out to me, in line 11 it already mentions checks, and it's better to have it clear from the beginning.
I guess it would be it would save us time in years going forward if these changes could be continued into the other the boilerplate resolutions from now on.
Yes.
Not that there won't be other changes, but we can try. Okay, all right. With that, all in favor of Resolution O, please raise your hand.
Oh.
Aye.
Any opposed? It's unanimous. R.
What was the other one?
R.
R. Approving completed tax rolls and directing the executing and delivery of warrants, and I would move that.
Seconded by Mike.
Here in line 5, the original wording is the cost of county governments in Tompkins County. And that's a somewhat strange way to say it. I believe it refers to towns, city, and school districts. And municipal is a good substitute word for those to make it clear. At least that's the word I believe Rick suggested.
We are into strange, but I'll accept it.
Mike, okay, with that, ready to vote on R. All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed?
R.
Thank you. Okay.
That's unanimous. Jim, I think your time record didn't go so well.
No, I know, but it wasn't. We have a scheduled meeting on the 23rd, and I'm not certain we'll have that, but if we need to do anything before the next ledge meeting, we'll try to do it prior to the meeting. I'm pretty convinced that no one wants to show up here on the 23rd of December. So thank you very much. You want to pay? No. Thank you very much for everything this year, the budget, all these resolutions that we do on a twice-a-month basis. And I appreciate the work of the committee and all the other committees who put things into the whole budget and capital process. So thank you for that.
All right. Thank you, Jim. I think we should, I would like to ask, well, I will not be sitting here next year in this seat. I think everybody should kind of assume that the committee meetings of 2013 shall be on your calendar for January. Just kind of hold those dates as usual, which we often do, so that we can, you know, protect those dates in case your committee is going to continue before we set up next year's committee. So as a general matter, but obviously canceling the end of December meetings is probably a very wise idea. All right. Public Safety Committee, Brian Robinson, Chair.
Thanks, Martha. I have one resolution, Resolution Z, ID 4478, appropriation from contingent fund, terminal pay, reimbursement, sheriff's office, law enforcement. I would move that.
Second by Leslin. Discussion? This is a roll call, short form roll call.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Anyone who wishes to be recorded as no? That's unanimous.
Thanks.
And your next meeting?
Well, I would say, keeping in vogue with everybody else, that we'll just cancel the December meeting.
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, then let's have a meeting then. Next Monday, the 9th, at 3 o'clock here. It really will be a pretty comprehensive explanation of 3:30, I'm sorry. Yeah. Be a pretty comprehensive explanation as to the whole background and all the information that went into the decision to at least get the jail expansion project going. I would invite members of the legislature that aren't on the committee to come as well. It'd be a good refresher, and even in preparing for this, you know, there was some information that I wasn't aware of. So I think it would be good, and it's important. And it's not designed to be an end-all, but it was something that was promised, and we're glad to do it, just like we do for other issues that may come up. By the way, I do want to point out that I've been on this committee throughout this whole four-year term, and I don't know if you saw these things coming or what, but I don't remember these hot-button things going on the other 3 years, but that's okay. We'll glad to deal with them. So, and if there's no other questions, that's the end of my report.
Yeah, I kind of feel like I couldn't have picked a better person, but blame the sheriff, I guess.
For this one? Yeah.
Yeah, it comes and goes. I've been on the public safety for 8 years before I was chair of the legislature, and some years it was the hot committee, and other years not much happened. So it was this year. So, and I think it will continue, and I think it's an important topic. All right. Thanks very much, Brian.
Yep.
Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean Claiborne, chair.
As far as I'm concerned, public safety is always the hot committee, and I mean basking in the sunshine hot. Well, WDIC is not keeping in vogue. We are going to meet on December 25th, which is Christmas Day, because we are excited about the work we're doing. We will let you know by the end of the week when WDIC will meet.
Right. Look forward to that report.
I try to convince everybody. I said, I'll bring the chicken. You know, people wouldn't come. The eggnog, you know, no one wants to come.
All right. Thanks very much, Logan. Health and Human Services Committee, Frank Proto, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Health Committee will be meeting on the 10th, which is next Tuesday. There's updated information regarding the status of the psych centers. I wanted to turn to Martha for a second. You attended the meeting where you were able to speak publicly. Can you say a few things about that now?
Well, it was very well attended. Lots of public officials, some amazing stories from family members and a couple of former patients. And it was a really compelling story. That was a week ago Saturday. So a week ago today, the assembly members and state senators in the affected areas, that would be Tom Libous, Tom O'Mara, Barbara Lifton, Donna Lepardo, and probably not Barbara Lifton, but Chris Friend, he's the one, he's in Chemung, were asked to come to the governor's office and had a meeting. I haven't heard a report from that. Maybe Sue has some information, but that they were going to make a presentation. I don't know if they were going to have an audience with the governor, but they were meeting with somebody on the second floor to really present the case of why not close those facilities. And I mean, the stories were incredible, including the former medical director who went through statistics. You know, when we talked about the CHA, we talked about ratings. And, like, on measure after measure after measure, they were mostly focused on Elmira, but they were in the top three in the state. It makes no sense. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if this will make a difference, but, you know, it was an excellent attendance and got good media coverage.
Yeah, thanks for saying that. The reason Sue Romanchek distributed something within the last day that I haven't had a chance to read the whole write-up, but the press release said more or less it was building on what Martha said. The number of family members that had a chance to speak at the meeting or at the public presentation Martha was at apparently resonated pretty well in Albany. So we're keep the pressure up. I mean, at least they're listening. There's always year-end items that the health committee has to do. COFA, I understand, will have one or two. So we're going to keep the meeting on. And I just wanted to, that's the 10th at 3:30. I just want to remind Brian that even though he's got a hot issue right now, I remember not too many years ago when public safety was dealing with an issue regarding consolidating the police departments. And why don't you tackle that one next year?
Oh, yeah, that's good.
He's on it.
He's on it?
Yeah.
That's a hot one, right, Leslie?
Yep.
Mark.
That's the end of my report. Right. Thank you.
Any questions for Frank? All right. Thank you very much, Frank. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Peter Stein, Chair.
Yeah, I think we have a couple of resolutions that were pulled from that. I thought it was the one on the extension of the Air Service Board. Isn't that right?
No, the next one, Jay was, not I.
You're good.
Okay, all right.
Right?
So,
yeah.
Then Jay's not one of mine. All right, so anyway, I have no report. The next meeting will be on the 16th, and we will meet at the usual time, at 10:30 in the morning.
All right. Thank you very much. Any questions? All right. Thank you, Peter. Can I get a motion on the minutes for November 12th, 2013, moved by Frank, seconded by Jim. Discussion, Dooley.
Yes. If you'd look at page 5, I just want to give you a couple of changes. In the third paragraph that begins Mr. Robison, the second line should be issues, plural. In the fourth paragraph that begins Mr. Shinagawa, the third line, H-E-A-R, should be H-E-R-E.
Julie, aren't these manifest errors?
I would think so, but I'm getting to the one that may not be. I don't know. I have in my note, it shows next Ms. Kiefer was excused at a particular time, but I was here for all of what Mr. Mariana said, so I think that line should be moved down to before Mr. Burbank. And with those changes, I would be happy to finally vote for a set of minutes.
I get it, Julie.
All right.
You're going to ruin the whole year, Julie.
Yeah, well, I thought about it. You almost were
bad. Isn't that acceptable on the moving the
it's the holiday season.
Those are acceptable.
All right. Acceptable to Frank and Jim? Okay.
Absolutely.
What, Frank?
I just wanted to ask clarification on packet page 75, the minutes of the 12th. Line, so I towards the bottom where it says Joanne Cipolla Dennis. Mm-hmm. I don't think she lives on Danby Road.
It's West Dryden Road.
This is Danby Road.
She has a summer home.
Summer home?
No. She lives on West Dryden Road.
Thank you.
Manifest error. All in favor with those
I have a question first. So just or a point of information about the minutes. Again, these minutes show that many, many people came and talked to us with a big concern, but doesn't include anything in here about, you know, the fact that we answered any of it, doesn't summarize any of our answers. And wait, do they even?
This was a public hearing. This was not the, I misspoke. This wasn't our legislature meeting. This was the public hearing. We did not speak.
Right.
Okay, well, then at the Tuesday, November 19th.
Well, we're on the 12th. Can we do that? Okay. We're ready to vote on November 12th minutes of the public hearing. All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Opposed? That's unanimous. That's unanimous. Yes. Okay. Let's get the 19th on the floor. Moved by Pat, seconded by Frank. Carol.
So once again, so we had a whole group of people come and speak to us, and we spoke back. And I believe, is it even in here that we responded by setting up the meeting, the very public invitation for people to come and join us at that public safety committee meeting? So I would suggest at least adding that to the minutes. Wherever the public safety report is.
Well, I believe that was under privilege, legislative privilege. Wasn't it when Brian said that?
Well, wherever it was, and I would trust our staff to add it later, but my suggestion is that we add something that there was a response and an invitation to come.
All right. Is that
friendly?
Acceptable.
Or?
I'm looking for where it should go. Is that friendly? Pat,
go.
Frank, is that friendly?
You want to send it back to committee, Pat?
It was an action where Brian said he would have a presentation, invite the public, and for public safety.
Brian is denying he ever said that.
All right. I hope that's friendly.
I think so.
Okay. Great. I leave it to the staff to find the appropriate place to put that. All right. With that change, anything else on the minutes for November 19th? All in favor, please raise your hand. And opposed. One opposed. All right. I'm sorry, folks, but before we go, I need to ask for a very brief, really very brief executive session for a personnel matter. So can I get a motion? Moved by Brian, seconded by Peter. All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? All right, we're going to take a five-minute break to cut the microphones, and then please be back in your seats. Thank you.
Could you sit over here, Kathy?